This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. It is Friday. It's August 23rd, 2019. If you've been following my various sagas on social media, I got my first back procedure today. I signed a form that said I would not drive or operate heavy machinery or make legal or otherwise important decisions. But listed on there was not, will not do a radio show or podcast. So here we are. I'm actually totally fine, and I'm not on any medication. Today, I want to talk about something called the SAR, and you may not know what that is, so let me tell you what it stands for. A SAR is a sexual attitude reassessment, and it's a seminar that is process-oriented. It's kind of like a structured group experience. And the idea is to promote the participants' awareness of their attitudes and values related to sexuality. And it will also help people understand how the values that they hold and how the attitudes that maybe they've internalized can affect them professionally and personally. A SAR usually provides an opportunity for people to explore and understand their beliefs within the realm of sex. And this self-exploration ultimately fosters improved communication skills, especially if you work in, say, a helping profession or the sexuality field. One of the things that is like people know about the SARs is that they use explicit imagery because they want to talk about various kinds of sexuality and sexual practices. So there are explicit images, which is kind of what they're best known for. But there's also small group discussions, experiential experiences. There's some role play sometimes. And the thing about the SAR is, you know, it's basically like a go-to. It's a go-to thing. If you work in the field of sexuality or adjacent to it, the first thing someone will tell you to do is, have you taken a SAR or, you know, go take a SAR. But what's interesting is that across the board, SARs are pretty uniform. They aren't that diverse. And the curriculum has essentially been written by white people, taught by white people, and also can sometimes be outdated. So I wanted to talk about that, and I brought on the perfect person. She's been on my show once before, but it was a long time ago. Bianca I. Laureano is an award-winning educator, curriculum writer, and sexologist. She's a founding member of the Women of Color Sexual Health Network and the Latinegras Project. I want to say that that has N-E-G-R-X-S. We don't know how to pronounce that, but it's inclusive. That's what I want you to know. Her most recent project is Anti Up, a virtual freedom school for justice workers offering professional development. She's written several curricula that focus on communities of color, including What's the Real Deal About Love and Solidarity and Communication Mixtape, Speak on It, Volume 1. And wrote the Sexual and Reproductive Justice Discussion Guide for the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, published in 2018. Bianca has been on the board of CLAGS, the LGBTQ Center at CUNY, and the Black Girl Project. Currently, Bianca's on the board of Sister Song, She resides in Oakland, California with her core partner, G, and is an ASEX certified sexuality educator and supervisor. You can check her out while we're talking at biancaloriano.com. Welcome back to the show, Bianca.
Thanks so much. I'm really excited to be here with you tonight.
So I gave a brief kind of background on what a SAR was. Is there anything you want to add about what a SAR is, what happens at a SAR, or what it's designed to do?
Yeah, I think you really covered it. I think the only thing that I would add to that is that it's numerous days back to back. So they're consecutive days where you're immersed in a very specific environment. So it really is a full body sensory experience.
Yeah. So it's like, what is it, like 10 hours? Is it 15 hours?
Yeah. So historically, some SARs have gone like 2 weeks. But currently, the expectations are between 2 to 3 days is usually standard. But there is some difference of opinion about whether or not that's a good amount of time to discuss the topics needed or not.
And do you agree with me that predominantly the people who are writing the SAR curriculum and teaching it are white?
Absolutely. I mean, also the people writing about it are also racially white, except for people in Taiwan. So there's a really interesting connection between how that happened, because it was racially white people who were doing the SARS here that were able to go and offer it worldwide. So it's this interesting maintenance of just one viewpoint and one perspective that's constantly being shared. And this has been for decades, like at least 40 years.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of people who teach SARS, and I'm not trying to be ageist here, they tend to be older, and they tend to have been in the industry or practicing sex therapist for 20 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the reality is that they were trained in a very particular way. And the world that we've inherited now is just not that world anymore. So we really need to like level up the kind of training that we're offering to people in the sexuality profession.
Let me ask you this. If someone out there has taken a SAR, let me ask you another question.
Okay.
Who should take a SAR besides people like sex educators?
Well, so I'm biased. I think everybody needs a SAR, regardless of what you do, because you're probably interacting with people. And that means that you have relationships in some capacity. So it's really a self-awareness process, like you said. And so that really impacts everyone. So even if you're like a stay-at-home parent, you're going to be parenting someone who's a completely different human being from yourself. And topics of sexuality will come up. It's also about knowing what your boundaries are. And sometimes you don't have the opportunity to learn that. And so this is a really specific opportunity for people to practice saying, you know, I'm not the right person for this, but I know who is. So it's also a networking opportunity to find other resources and other professionals that can step in when your boundary has been met and you can't offer more support.
See, this seems like a really important point. I just was at a public health conference in Michigan, the statewide health conference in Detroit. Shout out to them. And, you know, there's more discussion than ever before about how people need to be treated holistically. Mm-hmm. And so I like that you said, like, if you're interacting with people, so that doesn't exclude sex therapists. It's like therapists, caseworkers, social workers, medical professionals, healthcare providers, teachers, educators.
Right.
In order to approach someone fully, you do need to be able to talk about sex. And
absolutely.
You know, it's like when people take your medical history and they don't ask you anything about sex. It's like, you know, you're missing this piece of my life that you've somehow just like not photocopied on the form or something. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it's such a huge part of our lives, as you and your listeners know. And to have such a huge part of your life completely erased or excluded really does have an impact, like a real life impact.
Yeah. And then I also like this piece about boundaries, which is that I think we all know that sometimes the way in which we discover our boundaries is not in advance, but when we run into them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had someone in your room, a client in your office, for whatever reason, a person sitting in front of you, and they wanted to talk about something and you hit a boundary, like in real time with them, that doesn't serve them. And in fact, it could shame them, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's the thing that we want people to be able to understand, like, how is your body responding? How are you responding? Because sometimes we don't know that, like, our face is giving us away, or maybe we've turned bright red, right? So it's also about knowing how your body feels in certain situations. And, you know, I say that because I remember when I was a teaching in high school and middle school, you know, young people will just run up to you and say, "Miss, I think this happened to me over the weekend or last night." And it can be totally out of the blue, and mm-hmm. it can be about anything. And if you're not really aware of how your body can receive that information, you can possibly, you know, limit or expand the relationship that you're building.
Right. That's just come to you. Mm-hmm. And that seems, God, that seems really important.
Yeah.
I think it's time to take our first break. Let's hear from our great sponsors. And one of them, of course, is the Pleasure Chest. I love the Pleasure Chest. Go to pleasurechest.com to check them out. When we come back, we are going to talk more about the SAR and about using an intersectional lens. Stay with us. It's Anal August. That's right, it's that time of year when it's all about the rear. And yes, the Pleasure Chest has got all the gear. But there's so much more to anal sex than just plugs, beads, and prostate massagers. Whether you are embarking on your very first anal odyssey, or you're a certified ass master, the Pleasure Chest has tips and tricks to help you make the most of your anal adventures. First, there are 12 different sex ed classes all about the ass at stores this month. Can't make it to one? No worries. They'll be covering all things anal via their blog and social media. Everything from booty basics, advanced anal, to anal safety. Plus, there will be B-Vibe pop-ups in LA and New York throughout the month. You can get 20% off all B-Vibe products, online only, or get a free beginner anal toy with every purchase of $50 and up in stores. Go to pleasurechest.com and celebrate Anal August. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it, and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me in my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to know what you think about this. Have you yourself taken a SAR? Do you think you need an updated SAR? Do you have questions about the SAR? Give us a call at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. That line is always open, no matter what time you are listening. So my guest today is Bianca Laureano, who's an educator, a curriculum writer, a sexologist, and happens to be creating and teaching a brand new SAR. So we're talking about bringing an intersectional lens to the SAR. I want to go back for a second and define intersectional. It's become like a hot sort of buzzy word. I literally saw it on an enamel pin in a queer store yesterday. Like, wow. I'm not even making that up. I mean, when it's an enamel pin, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
But I want to I don't know that everyone defines it when they use it. So I want to define it first.
Right. Sure. So intersectionality is a term that was coined in the 80s, late 80s, by someone named Kimberly Crenshaw, who is a lawyer, an attorney. And it basically is a way to analyze the type of oppression that people experience. So it's a theory or a practice or a framework that looks at oppression. And so it basically asks us, what are the multiple identities that we hold that result in certain types of experiences when we're engaging with other people? So it really is a theory or a framework about relationships, because it asks us, how do we identify? Who are we today? How are we moving in the world? And then what does it look like when we bring that to school or to a religious space or to the grocery store and all the other types of places, spaces, systems that we go into? And so it really helps, in theory, put a different type of analysis on how we're viewing how oppression works in people's lives and what the impacts and the outcomes might be. So it helps us understand shared experiences of oppression, as well as gives us an opportunity to have individuals share their own experiences of oppression as well. A lot of people think intersectionality is bad, or they're afraid of it, or they roll their eyes. They think it's all about identity politics. And it's not. I understand why people think that way, because we don't really talk about it so effortlessly, because it is a very academic understanding. But what we've seen in the past, like 5 years, I think, is people taking this academic term and analysis and bringing it into our real life, real world experiences. So you'll see things like, I'm an intersectional feminist, and that in theory is supposed to give us a clue that we're talking to someone who values different types of experiences and how those impact the way that we're living and the world that we want to be a part of. And so it's, you know, I don't know if I'm giving that the best kind of summary, but I do teach a class on intersectionality, and I give a little bit more information about like its origins, because intersectional analysis has existed for decades and decades and decades before we had the term for it. And it's a very interdisciplinary term now. However, the origins were in a very legal form. So yeah, I don't know if that was helpful or if people have other questions about intersectionality.
No, that's good that you have an online course for it, because I know people should definitely take that course before using it, say, in their PowerPoint presentation. Okay, that was shade to no one in particular, or several people. Right. But so in like plain language, I also just want to say, it's like, you're approaching anything. You're approaching work. You're approaching a housing crisis. You're approaching land development. You're approaching the HIV crisis, and basically you're looking at it through the lens of multiple oppressions. Mm-hmm. That it's important to see who are the folks that are in the quote high risk groups. What do they have in common? What's their class status? What's their race? What's their ethnicity? What's their access to education like, right? And so it's like, you can't just be like, oh, well, it looks like men who sleep with men are the ones who get HIV the most. It's actually, you gotta think of all these different intersecting identities. I mean, I'm thinking of HIV right now because I was just there. And actually, I just read something that the largest growth of numbers of men of color getting HIV is happening in the South.
Yes.
So it's going to be really interesting to go to Sex Down South and be with a lot of Southern people who are doing this work. I'm really anxious to find out what they're saying.
Yeah, and I think the South is a really interesting case study because, you know, I lived in New Orleans for 2 years a year ago, and yeah, I was shocked. It was almost like I was 1992 New York City, where the services for individuals were just not what they are in other parts of the country. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how local activists and people who are living positive are working in the South.
Mm, yeah. Why do you think it's so important that we talk about intersectionality and apply this intersectional lens to the SAR, to the sexual attitude reassessment?
You know, when I took my SAR over a decade ago, it was through the ASECT, which is a membership organization for sexuality professionals. It was horrible. I was given data from like before the 1990s. And it was just old and, you know, only saw one image of people of color and they were pygmies. You know, it was just all the stereotypes of older people teaching people about sex ed was a lot of what I experienced. It was also a massive group of people. There were 50 people. So one of the reasons why I wanted to reimagine what the SAR experience could be was because I've been in the field for over 20 years now, and it's been lonely, and I'm glad to see emerging and even seasoned sexuality professionals emerging and finding a voice in ways that they weren't able to a decade ago. And I think that's for a lot of reasons, but I recognize that this new emerging group of individuals is coming with a completely different perspective on the world that we're in right now. And they recognize the urgency of doing the work so much better and of expanding their own practice. And I think that's what's really allowed me to take a step back and say, okay, what do we really need to do to get there? And we need to be honest. We need to bring in a conversation of how are we hurting each other? How can we heal? What does it look like when we're able to hold ourselves accountable? And what's the hard work of holding each other accountable as well? How do we build community? Even if we don't have to be best friends, but we're sex professionals, and maybe I would be a great referral for you to have, you know, in your docket of other professionals that you refer to. Or maybe I'd be somebody who would be a great connection for telling you about how to talk to your kid about sex. I mean, there's so many different opportunities for people. And using an intersectional analysis welcomes so many different perspectives that I think are often scared, intimidated, feel left out from entering a SAR space, because it is very academic historically, but it also is very much focused on like sex therapists and sex counselors, not so much the sex educators or the sex workers. And so that's a perspective I like to bring in, where we're the center, you know, our experiences are the center, and we're not just sitting back in this fishbowl opportunity watching things pass us by and it's not relating to our lives. So really making the experience relevant to our lives is really the key to the SAR that I've imagined and hope will evolve. And that's one of the important things for me about the SAR, is like not every SAR that I do is the same. And so, you know, I use media in a completely different way than it's traditionally being used. And that's one of the ways that I can show something that's more inclusive, not just from race and ethnicity and disability, but also make it inclusive in a way where I show people, this is how you find the transcript for something. This is how you find the subtitles. This is how, you know, you make this accessible to different people's brains and bodies. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
So in the past, do people just show porn or images from porn?
Yeah, usually images from porn, sometimes some anthropological images. So it really depends on what the conversation is, but usually the way that people interpret this core knowledge area of culture is just so broad. So for my SAR, I was introduced to pygmies, right, which is a very anthropological, historical assessment of difference, which did not relate at all to the world that I was living in or the communities that I work with.
Because you don't work with pygmies.
Exactly. That's right. I don't live in that country. I live in the United States, and we have, you know, differences here. But it was just a really interesting way to be reminded of how the United States sees itself in like a worldwide platform, but also that there's so many different experiences of like colonization and exploration and immigration that are just not touched upon. And so I just forgot what your question was.
No, just that do people show porn?
Oh, yeah.
Because they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just thinking, as I was thinking about today's topic, that even the decisions to include some kind of material and some kind of images have to be informed by biases.
Right. Absolutely. And right. Also, I mean, and that's a big thing that I hear older white SAR leaders say is, oh, well, it was so difficult to find media in the 70s and 80s. And I'm like, really? There was a whole blaxploitation genre. Like, how did you not know about Pam Grier? How did you not know about Eartha Kitt? You know, so it definitely is an example of, you know, being an outsider and being able to just represent the communities that you're a part of. And it does, you know, it's a skill. Like, I'm not a part of certain communities, but I bring those experiences into the SAR because I find them valuable and I want people to feel represented. And so you know, I think it just takes a different analysis and approach, and also care for the way that you want people to be engaged. But yeah, the early SARs were all about porn. It was like sitting for 10 hours watching porn back to back and discussing, you know, how we felt, because it was this assumption that we can become sanitized to some of the behaviors and activities that people were supporting might come to us with. But the reality is that not a lot of us have a practice where we have people actually physically doing things in front of us all the time.
Right.
So it's not, you know, I think it's more helpful for people to, you know, practice certain things than, you know, talking about them versus mm-hmm. assuming that someone's just going to disrobe and engage in a sex act while they're in the middle of a therapy session.
Right.
You know, that might happen, but it's not the reality. And so that porn was also very, you know, one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. It had the standard people that you would imagine in like 70s and 80s porn. And some of it was very commercial porn. Some of it was like, you know, porn made from individuals who just their personal whatever. And so I've definitely taken a different approach to showing porn. A lot of the materials that I show are popular culture. They're open access. And that's because I don't think that the materials that I show to teach people about themselves and the world need to be special or behind a paywall. So I like to show people, this is the film trailer we're going to watch, or here's a clip from this film that we're going to watch, where you can access it as well for free online. And that's something that, you know, is part of my anti-capitalist approach to sharing resources. And that's another different aspect of a SAR, where oftentimes people keep their supplies and their media images to themselves because they had to pay so much to get that type of information or get the DVD or the VHS tape. Whereas now, you know, it's a different world with the internet. So the images that we show aren't always so sexually explicit, but I think it's important to spend some time watching people process, you know, sharing that they were sexually assaulted as a child, or, you know, what does it mean when you're the provider and there's nothing you can do to help someone? You know, those are the things that I think are really important for us to get into. And we don't have to watch porn necessarily to get to that point.
Right. Right. Okay. We're going to take another break. There's so much more to dig in about this. I'm really excited that you're on. Okay. So let's hear from our new advertiser coming up. Audible Escape. So if you're already a member of Audible, or if you just are a romance novel fan, or maybe you're into erotica, Audible has this new thing called Audible Escape, where you become a member and you get access to 18,000 romance and erotic titles. And you know, it's just a huge, huge market. So listen to me talk about it some more, and then we'll be back. Nowadays, we all need a break from the stress and the chaos. It's nice to experience joy, dive into love, and escape the everyday, even for just a little while. If you love love stories, romance novels, and erotica, then you need to try Audible Escape. It's a new monthly subscription that provides unlimited listening to romance books, plus Audible Originals, stories you can't get anywhere else. Whether you're already hooked on reading romance novels, you love watching rom-coms, or you're looking for audio content that sweeps you off your feet, you're going to get access to over 18,000 romance titles. There are favorite authors of mine like Susie Bright, Rachel Kramer Bussell, Zane, Heather Novak, Allison Tyler, and Rose Caraway, who's both an editor and an amazing narrator. There is queer romance, African-American romance, erotic romance, even books like Speaking Sex to Power, The Politics of Queer Sex by Patrick Califia. And five of my books are on the service, including my erotica book, Stripped Down. Plus, who doesn't want to listen to a book called Thong on Fire? Join the community and try your first month for free. After that, it's $12.95 a month. If you are already an Audible or Kindle Unlimited member, it's just $6.95 a month. There's no commitment and you can cancel anytime. Download the app to explore all the love stories. Visit audible.com/Tristan to get started now. That's www.audible.com/Tristan.
The internet's number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with educator, curriculum writer, speaker, sexologist, Bianca I. Loriano. We've been talking about this sexual attitude reassessment. Bianca, you also have, well, you have a lot of, you know, tricks in your bag. You also, I recently saw on your social media, started advertising an online class about abortion. And you were like, hey, there's no sex age, there's no class for sex educators on abortion. Well, guess what? I made one. I think that's what it said.
Yes.
And it was, it's, you know, you're offering this at the height of major attacks on abortion access. And I want to remind people that when we have these government policies in place, the people who suffer the most when abortion clinics are closed, when new laws take effect, when you have to go through more paperwork, when you have to watch ultrasounds, all that bullshit. The people affected most are poor, people of color, disabled people, and also geographically, people who live in rural areas and people who live in areas where there just isn't access. You don't have your choice of like 10 places to go. So, okay, so tell me why you were like, oh my God, abortion, we need to talk about it, sex educators.
Yeah, you know, abortion is like never a part of the sex education experience when we're being trained to become sex educators. So even in our own field, there's been this separation between abortion and sexuality education. I mean, we talk more about pregnancy than we do about abortion. And, you know, I had to take that upon myself to get that training outside of the sex ed community. So I worked at an abortion, National Abortion Federation, as a hotline counselor, offering bilingual care and some support around finances. And that's still a hotline that exists today. And then I became an abortion doula, where I support people who are getting their abortions within the actual procedure room, where not too many people can enter with the patient. So I did that care work. And that was how I came into understanding, oh, this is what this law means. Oh, this is how it can challenge us. And the state that we're in, I'm like, we all need to understand what's going on. And there's a way to understand the laws and also the attempts to chip away at Roe v. Wade, which made abortion legal. And just the many ways that we need to be prepared to talk about this, because people have abortions more than we want to admit. And abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy. And a lot of the laws that are being introduced chip away at body autonomy as well. You know, like forcing someone to listen to an ultrasound is a violation of body autonomy for someone who's made a choice about their pregnancy already. So, you know, things like that are the attempts to put laws into place. And for a lot of sexuality educators, if we don't have this training, then we really can't speak on a lot of what's going on currently. And so it's really one of the ways that I encourage people to just stay up to date on what's happening, ask questions, stay curious, because people do come to us as educators wanting us to know the answer in many instances. And sometimes the answer is, I don't know. But when it comes to situations like abortion, I think a lot of people need to know at least three referrals to give to someone, whether it's a national one, whether it's an abortion fund, or some place that someone can get that kind of care and support. So I created this course. It's a 4-hour course. It's over 2 sessions online, virtually. And I think, you know, it's a really great course with a ton of information, so it can be a little bit overwhelming. But we talk about every single option that's available to people who are pregnant to terminate their pregnancy. And so that includes from early in a pregnancy to even third trimester experiences. And we also talk about the laws and how the laws have impacted and led to the murders of some of our most important abortion doctors. And we also talk about climate change and colonization and how other parts of the United States that are islands are being impacted by like hurricanes. You know, Puerto Rico had so many like 15 abortion clinics before Hurricanes Maria and Irma, and now with a lot of movement of doctors leaving the island because of the climate change and lack of opportunities for work, you're seeing less and less providers who can perform those procedures. And so it really is this all-encompassing, oh, the world's on fire, what can we do about it? Learn about abortion, because there's going to be more people who need to know how to get access to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I was teaching sort of a basic sex ed class at UC Riverside probably a couple months ago. And I started talking about different options, right? And someone stood up and said, we have vending machines, meaning that Riverside, I think, is one of only two UC campuses that actually have Plan B in vending machines. So you don't even have to go to the health center, right? Wow. You don't have to make an appointment. You don't have to get hassled by someone in the local pharmacy. You actually can go to a vending machine.
Wow.
And I thought that's amazing, because it's a it's a state-funded school. They probably had to go through like yards of red tape to get it. But it's like, when we say access, that is what we mean.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the morning after pill is for people who aren't pregnant yet, right?
Right.
So, you know, the next great move would be, here's, you know, mifepristone, here's some methotrexate for your, you know, medical abortion needs. Like, that would be great to have it right next to the Plan B as well.
Right.
Because those are experiences that you can have on your own and not under the, you know, supervision of a doctor in a hospital or at a clinic. Yeah.
Right. I just thought that was just so awesome. And but the other thing I was going to ask you about is, do you, when you do this abortion doula work, how does someone find an abortion doula? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so say that I'm going to go get an abortion and I'm like, I would really like someone there to kind of help me through the process. And I don't think my therapist is going to do it. And my best friend works during the day. So how do you find one?
So so I was trained and by an organization called the Doula Project, which was in New York City. And what they do currently is they provide that care to a variety of different people in New York City, but they also train out. So people like in North Carolina, you know, Charlottesville wanted to have a training and a couple other trainings. So there's a variety of different doula and midwifery spaces all over the United States. And so the doula work that I was doing, it was a relationship that we had already established with the local clinic and the hospital that offered women's health care, which is what it was under at the time. And that was the way that I got into that work. So I wasn't doing the logistics on my own. It was part of like the oversight of the people who were running the organization. There's also, though, a variety of different, like if you Google or go into a search engine and put abortion doula, so many different people will show up.
I'm afraid, though, that the tricky anti-choice people will show up. Like, what if they bought those keywords?
Right. They're not that smart yet. So they have not. They are often shocked that those are two words that get put together, because for them, they view abortion as such a horrific experience, which it doesn't have to be. And it really isn't for many people. Many people experience relief after their abortion. Mm-hmm. So there's that reality. But, you know, a lot of clinics, if you know, you ask, is there an abortion doula? Can I bring an abortion doula? I think a lot of clinics will consider, but they do have a safety plan that they have to maintain. And so if they can't consider adding an abortion doula protocol, a lot of them will tell you straight up, because there is, we do need to take care of our abortion providers because they are being attacked and murdered. And so it makes sense that there is a fear of allowing people to come into a procedure room. But I think abortion doula relationships are on the rise. It's also a relationship that you can have with someone over the phone. So many times I've had people outside of the state who are like, will you, you know, doula me through this particular, you know, the post effect, or, you know, who will text me, am I bleeding? Is this the right amount? When do I call the, you know, toll-free number or the 24-hour number? So I think a lot of us do abortion doula work in our everyday lives in ways that we haven't realized. But the difference might be that I was specifically trained to help with pain management. And so, you know, helping people breathe and not focus just on the pain, but also focus on like the pleasure of the relief of the life that they want to live. And that's something that's important as well as part of the abortion doula process and care.
Okay, that's great. For people who don't know that, that's a really important thing. We're going to take another break. We're going to go early because that's a good stopping point. When we come back, I want to talk more about this sort of slight divide between sex education and reproductive justice. So stay with us. More with Bianca Laureano when we get back.
It's anal August. That's right, it's that time of year when it's all about the rear. And yes, the pleasure chest has got all the gear. But there's so much more to anal sex than just plugs, beads, and prostate massagers. Whether you are embarking on your very first anal odyssey or you're a certified ass master, the pleasure chest has tips and tricks to help you make the most of your anal adventures. First, there are 12 different sex ed classes all about the ass at stores this month. Can't make it to one? No worries. They'll be covering all things anal via their blog and social media. Everything from booty basics, advanced anal, to anal safety. Plus, there will be B-Vibe pop-ups in LA and New York throughout the month. You can get 20% off all B-Vibe products, online only, or get a free beginner anal toy with every purchase of $50 and up in stores. Go to pleasurechest.com and celebrate Anal August.
Hey, Dylan, guess what?
What's that, Ginger?
I'd love for you to come with me on this amazingly sex-positive, queer, and polyam-friendly, kink-aware, all-inclusive resort vacation in paradise.
Oh, really? This trip sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Ginger A. Bentham stamp of approval?
It has the sexiest name. It's called The Swing Set Takes Desire. It takes place in Cancun, Mexico, at Desire Riviera Maya, November 2nd through 9th, 2019. This trip to paradise is co-hosted by Javi and Shara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, Bradford and Angela from the By the By podcast, and special guest Tristan Taramino, author, podcaster, and creator of excellent, ethically produced porn. And you can find more information at swingsetdesire.com.
Oh, Ginger.
What?
Get with the times. Everybody knows about swingsetdesire.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set is hosting its 8th annual trip to paradise. Drop your information in the form at swingsetdesire.com and boom, hot tub happy hour.
No way. I can go there and come there too. There's this super hot harness I've been dying to use.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to swingsetdesire.com and book your trip to join us for the Swing Set Takes Desire, November 2nd through the 9th, 2019.
All right, Dylan, I'm on it. Swingsetdesire.com.
You'll be glad you came.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I always give a shout out to the Pleasure Chest, and often I tell you what's going on at their stores. Well, I'm about to be traveling, and so there's about to be a few pre-recorded shows. Don't worry, they'll be awesome. But I want to give you the calendar for the next couple weeks because there is a lot going on. In New York City on the Upper East Side, August 28th, Advanced Anal. August 29th, Poly 101. September 3rd, Great Sex Without Penetration with Joan Price, an amazing presenter. September 4th, Role Play and Fantasy. September 11th, Blowjobs and Beyond 201. I don't even know what's Beyond 201, so that will be helpful. In the West Village, August 24th, is a Vogue Ball. That should be really fun. In Chicago, August 25th, a Butt Plug Workshop. September 4th, Queer Kink. September 8th, Pussy Pleasing. In Los Angeles, August 28th, Bondage for Beginners. September 4th, Blowjobs and Beyond. September 11th, Sex Magic. So go to pleasurechest.com and click on events to see more about all of these. They're all free, first come, first serve. And if you pick yourself something up, which you should do, use the promo code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle. So I'm talking with Bianca Laureano, who is, well, her life's work is to decolonize sex ed, among other things. And one of the things that I heard you say was, you know, there strangely is this kind of gap between reproductive justice and sex education. And mm-hmm. I've also seen that, having kind of moved in both worlds, I'm a little bit like, why aren't people in both worlds?
Mm-hmm.
Because you nailed it when you said we're talking about bodily autonomy, which is mm-hmm. central to sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we not kind of all in the same spaces at the same time? Well, you just got on the board of Sister Song, which is a reproductive justice organization. And so I thought, well, you're the perfect person to ask. Why do you? Well, okay. First, I want to say, do you think there's a divide? And then how can we fix it? I guess if there's not a divide, I have to ask you another question.
I think that there is a gap. And I think there's many reasons for that gap. One is that reproductive justice is a very new language. It's a new framework. And when I say that, I mean that it's not that old. Like, it was a term that was coined in like the 1990s. And so this framework that's emerged has been challenged. It's been reimagined. It's just been published upon, you know, a couple of years ago. And so when you have like a new framework that's being introduced, it takes a while for the people who created it and coined it to really demonstrate how you can put it into practice. And I think that a lot of people kind of already buy into the tenets and principles of reproductive justice. But when it was first emerging, it was focusing just on, in my opinion, pregnancy. When you can, having the right to choose when you want to become pregnant, having the right to choose how you want to parent or if you want to parent, and those being some of the primary principles of reproductive justice. And so that's really the piece that I don't think gets translated very easily to other sex educators or even sexuality professionals. And I think today the term justice turns people off in general, and people assume that they know what reproductive means. And really, I think people confuse all the terms. But reproductive justice is very different from reproductive health, which is different from reproductive rights. And so the reproductive rights is about the policy, the legislation. So, for example, Roe v. Wade would be a focus on reproductive rights, policymaking. When it comes to reproductive health, that comes to the doctors, the nurses, the midwives, the HIV workers, people who provide certain kinds of care and testing when it comes to health for our reproductive body parts. And then there is reproductive justice, which is about leadership, access. It's about power. What are the ways that the people who are not as, who don't have the same kind of accessibility as you were talking about with abortion, how can we get them to lead us and tell us what they need? And also, how can we get out of the way so they can get what they need? And so reproductive justice can feel overwhelming because it's about a collective communal conversation. And that's different. Like, when you remove the white supremacy that we all talk about in, you know, interracial conversations, and you just have communities of color talking, we also still have our own types of oppression that and harm that we have and that we provide and that we invest in and that harm each other. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, for example, Sister Song is an organization that separates the experiences of Indigenous people who have a very different experience being colonized people in this country to Black people who are, you know, whose ancestors were enslaved Africans. And so those two communities are, for example, communities that were like, hey, we're not fighting here, but we're also not including each other. What are the ways that we can do that better? And so you see a lot of mobilization among tribal affiliations and tribal affiliations is a complicated term in its own right, but you see a lot more of cross-cultural connections with some of the most impacted and harmed communities that have been targeted for eugenics, for forced sterilization, and other sorts of reproductive harm. And so one of the other aspects of reproductive justice that is also starting to turn a new tide is that there was no conversation about pleasure and sex or sex at all. And so that was a reproductive justice challenge. They had to play catch up. And one of the outcomes of that is the Let's Talk About Sex conference, which is happening in October in Atlanta. And it's the only reproductive justice conference in the United States. And so that says something really important. And so if you're interested in getting into the field or understanding RJ better, reproductive justice, I would encourage people to check it out. They have funding. They support participants in attending. So that's different from a lot of other conferences as well that have really expensive and pricey, price tags attached to them. But for me, the bottom line, it's a new and emerging framework. It's, originators are open to critique and expansion. And that's probably one of the reasons why it's been such a challenge to merge where we're at now with what we need as well.
And before that, in Atlanta, you are doing your SAR at Sex Down South, okay, September 3rd and 4th. It's basically a pre-con to Sex Down South. I heard that it sold out, but have there some spots have opened up? Tell me.
Yeah, so we totally sold out about 2 weeks ago, and we checked in on the room, and we have capacity to have more folks, so we opened up a couple of more spots. And so it's a pre-conference with Sex Down South, so it is during the day, the work day, so it's not a weekend situation, and that's because it is a professional development experience. We encourage people to tell that to their employers and to recognize that they should be paid for the really intensive work that they're doing. So we're really excited. That was our, goal, was to have 20 people in the space. I'm really excited to be facilitating this with an emerging SAR facilitator whose name is Goody Howard. She's a sex educator, she's a social worker, and she too recognized that this is something that we need. And she has an energy that I love, and it's probably going to be one of my career highlights to be doing this with her. So I'm really excited for the work that we're going to be able to do together. And our experience is Sex Down South. It's my first time. So I'm also excited to support those conference providers, Marla and Tia.
And I am going to Sex Down South, and I'm going to the SAR people. So if you're going to be there and I don't know you, come up and please say hi. Even if I look like busy or tired, please just still come up and say hi. Okay, good. And so at your website, biancaloriano.com, people can find out about this SAR and also about your online classes, some of which we mentioned.
Yeah, that, and also antiuppd.com is where I have all of the professional development stuff. So yeah, if you want to read like a wordy thing about me, that's definitely on my website. But if you want the quick and sweet, when's this class coming up, antiupp.com, antiupppd.com is where to go.
Okay, great. Also, if you want to follow her on social media, on Twitter, she is at Latino Sexuality. On Facebook, she is Bianca I. Laureano. And on Instagram, she is Latinegra Sexologist. You could also type in her name and find all this information. I'm just telling you. thank you so much for being on the show. I'm going to see you very short, like in 10 days or something. And I can't wait to take your SAR.
Yay, I'm excited. Thank you so much.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. I also want to shout out to potentially some new listeners, because I was in Orlando for Podcast Movement, which is a big conference for podcasters and podcaster adjacent people. And it was just amazing. And I met a ton of amazing people, and I might've given some pens with my website out. So if that describes you, welcome to listening to my show. Okay. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. My guest next week is going to be Paulita Papel. She is a feminist pornographer currently working in Berlin, and she has her own site which offers scenes of real couples having sex. It's pretty cool. So check that out. And then the week after, the first week in September, when I'm in Atlanta, I'm going to get to interview Cameron and Karen Lee Potter from the podcast Sex Talk with My Mom. It is, in fact, Sex Talk with His Mom. Cam is a millennial, and his mom is a self-described cougar, and they talk about sex, and they are hysterical. So that was a really, we did that in person, and that's going to be a really great show. Okay, until then, you can catch me on all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino. The show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. In the meantime, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.